This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Russ White.
Thanks, Hannah. Here's Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and Secretary of the Board of Trustees Bill Beekman with Spartans volleyball coach Kathy George and defensive specialist Corey Master.
We're here with Kathy George, the head volleyball coach at Michigan State, and Corey Master, one of the star defensive talents on our team this year.
So, Corey, what started you being really interested in volleyball? What happened when you were much younger to get you really fired up about playing volleyball at this level?
Well, actually, I started playing volleyball as in a team in third grade. And even before that, my godparents, they have three daughters, and two of them actually ended up playing in college. But just they had me passing a volleyball against a wall with them when I was first grade, maybe. So I just have always been interested in it. And watching them grow up and going off to college and seeing that higher level volleyball just kind of made me want to be a part of it.
Now, did you play AAU volleyball?
I did. I played for a club called Team Z, and I'm from Cincinnati.
So to help people understand who might be listening, sort of what you see is a difference between sort of high school team volleyball, because you did that, and this AAU sort of volleyball that with more elite players.
Yeah, a lot of the times club teams are much more elite. From my club team, we have four in the Big Ten right now, so it's a lot higher level volleyball. But I think another big difference is the recruiting aspect. And from high school, a lot of sports recruit out of their high school teams, where with volleyball, a lot more of it is through clubs. So we'll go to tournaments with hundreds of volleyball courts around and coaches walking around looking at seeing what players they want. So it's a lot more of building yourself up with that way, where I think high school is, for many people, more of a fun opportunity.
Focused on the team thing.
Yeah, and it's a lot. I mean, you have your whole school supporting you, where when you're playing club, it's a lot more of that individual team.
So how did you have to try out for the club?
Yes.
And then there's a lot of traveling and everything involved?
Yeah, and especially where I'm from, there's not many tournaments in Cincinnati. So we would go to, like, Indiana, Columbus, Kentucky, a lot of big volleyball places. And that's where a lot, especially the qualifiers for nationals, which we always went to Florida for our nationals. And so we would go to qualifiers where there'd be hundreds of teams. And by the end of the tournament, you're playing some of the best people in the country.
And so that's where Coach George found you?
Yes.
Let me tell you a story about Corey. Okay. I was looking at some of her teammates, and as she said, four of them landed in the Big Ten. But it was match after match, and I was there a lot. And so were my assistants. And we come back from the tournament, and we were always like, yeah, we really like those girls. But do you know who makes that team tick? It's Corey Master. And she's a little bumper, so she's, what, all of 5'4", right, Corey?
Yep.
And then she just stood out, and we said, that's the catalyst right there. And she's all the time, she's solid. She's not up and down. She's consistent day in and day out. And that's what we loved about her. And so we actually took her out of turn. Typically, we have our positions where we recruit them every so often. We went 1 year early just because we wanted this kid, and we wanted her to be a part of our team.
And so what was, for your perspective, the difference between sort of playing at college at this level and your club team?
I think there's a few things. I mean, people talk about the speed and how much it changes. Just the way we run our offense, the ball comes at you faster, the ball is set faster. And especially as a defender and blockers as well, you have to have much faster reactions and much more attentive to all the details of reading skills and seeing the attacker's body. And just that kind of adjustment is big for any freshman coming in. I think also just the adjustment just coming into college and having so many different things on your plate at such a high level, whether it's your academics, your team, and just so many different variables, and learning how to manage all of those things but still wanting and to do them at such a high level is such a jump from high school to college.
So
man, Big Ten.
Ooh. Yeah. Big Ten. And that's that. I wanted to be in the Big Ten. I knew from pretty early on that I wanted to be a part of a conference that every day was going to be a battle. And for many high school teams, and especially club tournaments, that's not how it works. I mean, it's not until the last day that it's top-level volleyball, but in the Big Ten, it's every single night.
Yeah, Coach George was not very pleased with the president's decision about expansion because we made volleyball a much more difficult sport to to win
let's go ahead and the traditionally strongest team.
We'll just sort of keep them all here. When you play well in the Big Ten, you're going to play well nationally.
Oh, absolutely. And that's what we realized. I mean, you come out of the Big Ten and you can be middle of the pack in Big Ten, and how many of us were in the Sweet 16? Like, it just proves that that's what's going to set you up for success at the end of the year.
Now, you just had some international experience?
I did, and I was just in China for 10 days.
Okay, with?
The USA volleyball team. Okay. It's the collegiate national team.
And what was your experience there? What was it like?
It was better than anything I could have expected. I mean, starting with the volleyball, I needed that international experience. I mean, playing different countries, especially China, it's just a very different system than what we play here in the U.S. So I needed that experience of how the game changes when as you get older and transition from college. I mean, the ball is different. There's just so many variables. But just as an overall experience, it was, I mean, we went to the Great Wall, the Forbidden City, Tiananmen Square. I mean, just so many experiences that how many people get to say they've done in their lifetime. So, I mean, it was a great experience, and I'm so thankful that I've Michigan State and Kathy and everybody made that possible for me.
I'm not very tall, okay? So,
neither am I.
Well, but so if I'm sort of a parent with a kid and I'm not very tall, and I'm thinking volleyball's for really big mm-hmm. people these days, what do you tell those people about what you need to do? What advice would you give to parents and young people who were in that, you know, sixth grader who doesn't look like they're going to be 6 foot, so they can't be the sort of the dunker over
right.
the net all
not
the time.
Not the point scorer.
Yeah.
I think we say it all the time that defense is the heart of the game. And, I mean, you might not be scoring points for your team, but you're setting them up for that.
Keeping them from points.
Yeah, and you're setting up that opportunity to score. And so I think I've found such a high level and such a passion in that, because you don't have to be the tallest kid in the world. You just have to have the heart and the will to work for something. I mean, it's not about the glory. You're not going to get all these acknowledgments and everything for being the point scorer, but that's okay because...
But you might get to go to China.
Yeah, exactly. And you're going to have those opportunities.
She's being modest right now because she's the 2-time defensive player of the year in the Big Ten, and she's trying for that third.
I was trying to get you in.
She's amazing. And but the thing that I think is the position is called libero. Some people could call it libero. But it's a girl with a different color jersey, and size really doesn't matter in that. It's really the heart, it's the tenacity, it's the perseverance, it's the way, like I said, she's so focused, and she's been a 2-time captain already and going into her third year as captain, so she's taken over from a very young age, and she's that one heartbeat. She gets everything directed out there. So I love the intangibles that Corey brings in addition to her ability, and so yes, you can be small and play as long as you have that big heart.
But I want to sort of use this for both of you, because when I think about the value of sport, you may play beach volleyball or go on to an Olympic team. I don't know, but I hope so. But, you know, that's hard to imagine in a lot of sports but there's a lot of intangibles that you learn through sport that you've developed that become the value of sport. And particularly in a game like volleyball, which might not be people view as a lifetime game.
Mm-hmm.
So talk about those and why you would want to encourage young people to focus on those as much as how tall they are or how many accolades they get.
Yeah. Well, I think volleyball, more than really any other sport, is just so team-oriented. And, I mean, you can have one of the most talented players, but they could be in it for the wrong reasons and not – want to give back to their team. We talk about that a lot in our gym, is you're going to get out of it what you give into it. And that means investing in your teammates and building those relationships with people around you. And it's just in the sense that you make people want to work hard. And that, I mean, you can say that's done by example, like you're going to go hard every time that you're in the gym. And we talk about that consistency with it. But I think a lot of it's just making other people wanting to work hard, and that providing that inspiration for other people.
And tell her a little bit about that Herman Miller. We just went to, with the team, mm-hmm. the women's basketball team and women's volleyball, went out to Herman Miller and did a thing. And they took us around and explained to us how maybe we can grow as people and what we can do in terms of getting into the working world. Because as we change our roles from being volleyball players and then we do get out there after our senior year, we might not have had the time to do all the internships. But they said, you know what? You're on a 4-year internship. They said the things that you learn time management, punctuality, cooperation, being decisive. You learn all these things. And they said your resume will be filled with the characteristics, judgment. Everything. You're going to have the characteristics that are already innate in you because of the programs and that you've been through and how you've had to go through them. We've had to pick ourselves up from our bootstraps. We can't be feeling bad for ourselves. We have to learn to bounce back the next day, and we can't get frustrated. We have to keep working. We have to stay calm under pressure. We have to keep our minds clear. And I think it's very important. Every night in the Big Ten, we are playing one of the top teams in the nation. Whether we win or lose, we have to refocus, and both of those can be a challenge. So, you know, they are getting stronger. And we talk about that. I meet with every group and I say, what are the things you've learned from last year to this year? I'm talking more about the character builders. What has happened? How have you changed? And it's incredible to see somebody come in as a freshman and then leave as a senior. I mean, this little one right here, I mean, how much she's grown and her leadership ability is phenomenal.
And that's something that Michigan State's just been unbelievable at, is just providing student athletes with so many opportunities. And student athletes have a voice. And I mean, we can go into a meeting and give our opinions on different things. And definitely the outreach opportunities. I mean, you go into a meeting and you see 20, 30, 40 people just say that they want to get involved in different things on campus. And I mean, as a freshman, we were just saying how much you grow. And as a freshman, you might not understand all of that, but by the time you leave here, you've built your resume of different things that you've wanted to get involved in and can give back to, because you recognize how many people have given so much time and effort to you.
If you had one or two things that, from a student-athlete perspective, you wish could be a little bit different to make this an even greater experience, what would those things be?
When I think about it, the only couple things that I would think about, I mean, there's pros and cons to it all, but I think the only thing I would say is just that study abroad experience, especially now that I've seen so many people have those experiences. Yeah. I mean, when I came into college, that wasn't a big concern for me, but just learning about what I want in life and things I want to experience. It's
the cultures.
Yeah, so and different. Going to China and seeing different cultures, I'd love to have that opportunity. And I mean, doing that in a study setting too, where you kind of get those both sides of it, I think that would be an unbelievable experience. Sure. And then the other thing we'll just say, be going back to those internships. I mean, when they said that this is your 4-year internship, I completely wholeheartedly believe that. I have learned everything that I could want to learn from this experience just as a student athlete. I'm just really hoping that when I graduate here with this level of experience, that other people see that as well.
If you're not playing volleyball in 5 years, what do you want to do?
I want to be a marketing manager for a big company. It could be anything from a sports team to a bank to just involved in marketing. And
so it would have helped you to even job shadow.
Right, and I just started doing that as well, which has been that's the only reason that I've learned exactly what I want to become, is just through job shadowing.
So that helps a bit to
absolutely
close the gap.
Seeing hands-on experience and what people go through and what their day-to-day process is has been very helpful.
So volleyball is becoming more popular as a sport.
Oh, it keeps growing. We were just at Nationals in Orlando, which Corey alluded to earlier, but under one roof there was 175 courts going in a convention center from 8 o'clock on the hour, new teams from 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock at night. Just 175 in that building and another 38 in the other building at Wide World of Sports. This is all throughout the course of 2 weeks. You know how many thousands of people were there? And it's just, it's tremendous, and that's Nationals. And you have these, that's not even the only Nationals. There's three different national tournaments. So some of the teams there are not going to the other ones. They're huge, and volleyball is massive, and just recruiting to it has been, it's very challenging.
Participation nationally has grown.
It's up. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So you're one of the few sports nationally that is really growing.
Right.
And to what do you attribute that, outside of great coaches like you?
Oh, boy. I really don't know. I think that that players are being exposed to it a little bit earlier, and they're starting to get excited about it. Volleyball is one of those sports that right away it's hard to do. I mean, you might not be picking up a volleyball and saying, I know exactly how to do that. You can kick and you can dribble and you can do things like that. But volleyball's, you know, takes a little work, and that they're getting the exposure.
Right,
to get it right without
breaking
your nose. But, but they're starting to get there earlier. There's more youth development programs that are getting in there, and so the grassroots programs are growing, and that's probably has something to do with it.
Now, there's the risk in volleyball. There's some repetitive shoulder.
Mm-hmm. But you're not getting, well, I shouldn't say you're not having ACLs because you are, but you're not getting them at the rate that you do see in some sports. And you know, we're not having the contact with people, so we're not having those kind of injuries. But you do get, if you're fundamentally, if you're not doing your arm swing technically correct, you will have some strains in your shoulder and maybe sometimes your elbow, but hopefully you can nip that by proper teaching at the young ages.
Yeah, it's a rare sport where the only people you'd hit would be on your own team by accident.
Yeah, exactly. And that's happened. And the floor. Corey's on the floor a lot.
The floor's a little
so what about concussions? That's getting a lot of play now in terms of volleyball.
Mostly when you're knocking into somebody, would you have a concussion? And that does happen. I had a player that was walking into the Jenison Fieldhouse with a cell phone and hit herself on the stairs and was out for a week. But other than that, volleyball on the court, again, it's not as often as some of the other sports. I think soccer's concussion rate it's pretty high, and you know, because they do knock into each other more often, but we don't
and
have those.
Also using your head in the game.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. We have had some concussions with actually getting hit in the head with a volleyball, like off of an attack, and you do see those occasionally, but that's a hard-hitting person. So.
But by and large, though, mm-hmm. it's not the repetitive
right.
injuries.
It's not going to happen repetitively.
Right,
you're exactly
correct.
Because
one of the concerns about soccer right. and growing up with young children is that they don't have the neck
exactly.
strength. That's appropriate for right. for soccer for headers, and they all want to be like some
the older guys that they see,
to
right.
see on TV,
right.
and they're not really able to have the neck strength and other
right.
skill sets.
Right.
So it's a and you guys teach good technique when you have all these camps. You try
mm-hmm.
to.
We do. We try to teach safety when you're playing in everything. And so, you know, really wanting to make sure that the mechanics are right and that the coaches are teaching the skills the right way.
Not that you're that old, but how's
how's
coaching changed for you over the years?
The recruiting aspect has changed a great deal in terms of how high intensity it is, and the parents are very aware of the recruiting at this point. And so the age of players that contact us is in the eighth grades and freshman year, and we're making decisions on very young players. So that's changed. So being out there, being aware of kids early is important. I think that, you know, just the way you communicate might be different than it was in the 80s, 90s, you know, in that area. It's changed the way you've had to coach, but I think players have the same intensity and the drive that they've had in the past, and we just have to make sure that we're, you know, that we're staying in touch with, you know, our players and what they're trying to do. And so in different ways, I've just gone about coaching different. I've adapted from the 80s where it was a Bobby Knightish style to the 90s and then, you know, and then now. But it has been an interesting changes.
What about you for the recruitment part? I mean, you were a highly recruited student athlete. We're very fortunate that you chose Michigan State. But how do you feel being on the other end of this recruiting stuff? Does it make you feel really important? Is it nice to have all those phone calls and texts or all those people gathering around and not being able to talk to you but watching you play? I mean, all that kind of stuff.
Well, for me, I mean, I think I was a little bit different than other people. I mean, I had people on my team that were high-level recruits that wanted to go to every single school and see.
To visit.
Yeah, but I was more, I knew kind of what I wanted, and I wanted to limit it because I wanted to have my high school experience before I began my college one. So, I mean.
A wise young woman.
So I committed actually going into my junior year, so I was not yet a junior in. Now that's considered late.
That's very late.
But at the time, that was pretty normal. I think it's funny, though. We would always joke. I mean, you go to a club tournament, and when you have good people on your team, you'll be playing a match, and all of a sudden, 10 minutes before that game starts, and there's 10 coaches surrounding, and the parents would always say, the coaches are swarming. For me, that never bothered me. I kind of liked having a little eyes on you, a little bit of that pressure to make you perform at your best. I think it can be intimidating for a lot of players, and we talk about people playing inhibited, and I mean, that's something that you're going to have to deal with all the time, and it begins at a young age and forces people to learn how to play at their best when that pressure kind of is there.
Keep the focus.
Yeah. Yeah, and just having that focus even when you have eyes on you. But that was never a problem for me. I think it was just I wanted to have my high school experience, and just how much people would say, come to my school. It's a lot for a high schooler, and trying to figure out, especially now when you're a freshman in high school, 3 months ago you might have figured out where you were going to high school, and then now
or what club you're going to
play.
Yeah,
exactly. So many decisions that you're trying to make at such a young age, and now you're trying to make a decision for something that's 3-4 years away. That's just unbelievable to me.
So if you waved a magic wand, would you have the rule be a decision later?
I would. Yeah. Yeah, I would. And I think,
even though the coaches and everybody argue for a decision.
No, I want it later. I want it later. I just want to find a rule that can get it to be an even playing field where there's people that aren't cheating and breaking rules, but that would really stick to that, because these kids are too young to make those kind of very important decisions, I think.
And you see a higher transfer rate, too, now that it's going lower, younger, because, I mean, you don't know exactly what you want in a school or in
a
team.
What you want to major in.
Yeah, you don't know any of those things. So I think it's so much harder to make a decision at that young age, and it's such a higher likelihood that it's going to change in those years.
But what kind of rule can you have to recruit later? And if you say, well, they can't come to campus until they're going into their senior year, well, there's going to be people coming to campus, and
you're right.
They could say they're taking a regular tour, but there's going to be a meeting somewhere. And so you don't know what it is. They met at the cafeteria by accident.
No, it's all that stuff,
it's
yeah.
So bad.
Hopefully we can write some of that part in a way that makes it a better experience for coaches who want to stay in the profession, and student-athletes
mm-hmm.
who feel like they really genuinely have choices
right.
and to demonstrate absolutely. Their best behavior. So any final words?
Well, I thank you for having us here
yes.
today. And, you know, I just think that, you know, the MSU has provided us great opportunity with our women's volleyball team, and we're very proud to represent. And I think we have a great group that does that just
We are.
Really
we're
well.
Proud of you all as well.
So,
I mean, it's good to have you both here. Bill?
Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
That was Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and Secretary of the Board of Trustees Bill Beekman with Spartans volleyball coach Kathy George and defensive specialist Corey Master. To hear their conversation again, please visit SpartanPodcast.com.
Hi, it's Scott Westerman for the MSU Alumni Association. You know, we live in a time where people just don't join things anymore. So why are so many Spartans joining the MSU Alumni Association? Well, perhaps it's our world-class alumni enrichment team, constantly stretching Spartan minds and supercharging Spartan careers. Or perhaps it's our Spartan pipeline, which connects you to trusted friends wherever your adventures may take you. The MSU Alumni Association is dedicated to adding Spartan value to your Spartan life. Whatever it is that may be keeping you up at night, we can connect you with a fellow Spartan who can help. We truly live in a world where who you know is just as important as what you know. And joining the MSU Alumni Association can help you build the relationships you need for success on the job and in every corner of your Spartan life. That's why more and more Spartans are joining the MSU Alumni Association. Activate your membership right now at alumni.msu.edu.
Sundays at 4 o'clock, it's MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. MSU Today is a lively look at MSU-related people, places, events, and attitudes put into focus through conversations by MSU President Simon, Spartans AD Hollis, sustainability-focused Dr. Kirk Heinze, and me. MSU Today every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock on AM 870 WKAR.
is Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, it's a pleasure to welcome to Greening of the Great Lakes Lisa Wozniak. Lisa is the executive director of the Michigan League of Conservation Voters. That's a nonpartisan organization that serves as an advocate for the long-term sustainability of Michigan's water, air, and land. And Lisa, welcome to the blogosphere, too. You are now blogging, and you have been blogging, but now regularly blogging on mlive.com/environment. So you are a blogging neighbor of ours now.
That's right. Kirk, thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm delighted to have joined you in the blogosphere and have had the opportunity over the last few weeks and months to actually write about a number of really critical issues that provide both challenges and opportunities to the state of Michigan as it pertains to our natural resources. So it's a great pleasure to both be on your show today and then to be part of that blogosphere.
Well, Lisa, you were instrumental in getting the Conservation Voters, the Michigan League of Conservation Voters started. You have a strong background in environmental advocacy. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your organization.
Sure. You're right. This organization was started in 1999, and at that point, 15 years ago, I actually was an introductory board member alongside a really interesting group of people. It was a small board at that point, but it was bipartisan at that point as well as in its current form today. We had people on that board at that point that included people like Joan Wolf from West Michigan, Bill Rustem, whose name we know from the current administration, Lana Pollock, former state senator. And in the years that have ensued between 1999 and today, I'm really proud to say that not only was I chosen to actually lead the organization, so I've been in this position for almost 10 years, but we've evolved from a staff that was literally one in 1999 to a staff of 18 today. We have proven ourselves to be a very credible, pragmatic resource within state government, and I would say even within county and local government as well. We have tools that track and score our legislature, our governor, and even our Michigan Supreme Court, all of which are bodies that influence our state's environmental policies in a significant fashion. We have a politically astute team with two permanent offices in Grand Rapids and Ann Arbor and four new offices in Kalamazoo, Lansing, Muskegon, and Ypsilanti. We're really determined to make this issue one that is of top priority to our decision makers in a nonpartisan way, which you outlined at the beginning of this introduction. So thank you.
You mentioned some of the services you provide, and before we get into some of the specific issues that I know are important to you and to the league, you just released a scorecard on the Michigan legislature, and I think the grade overall was incomplete, but tell us a little bit about the scorecard, and not exactly a devastating grade, but not a very good one either.
Yes, so we did indeed release our 2013-2014 environmental scorecard, and the results show that the work of our legislative officials in Lansing, our elected officials, that they do not reflect the importance of our state's natural resources. State legislators are unfortunately failing to act on land, air, and water issues in a significant fashion, and so for that reason, we gave the overall legislature an incomplete grade. It was one of the most complex scorecards we've ever tackled because one of the main problems, which has been a problem that's been ensuing over the last few legislative sessions, is that fewer and fewer critical issues are being allowed to be voted on the floors of the State Senate and the State House. So they're being trapped in committee. The committee chair is not allowing the issue to go to the floor of those two bodies. And so we took a strong look at that and said, how are we going to tell the general public about what's really happening in Lansing? So for the very first time, we actually included committee votes, and we also included introductions of key issues, introductory bills that may have never made it, and most of them haven't, unfortunately, to the floors of the House and the Senate. And we used all of that to actually score each individual legislator and the legislature as a whole. So again, they received overall an incomplete for their failure to address some of the state's most critical environmental and conservation issues.
Lisa, what's your take on the reason for this stonewalling in committee? Is it political? Is it pressure from some industries? Is it a combination of factors? But, I mean, it sounds like it's an intractable problem almost.
Well, I think it's a combination of a number of things. I'm a big believer in a nonpartisan approach to these issues. If we look back in history, especially at the federal level, but also at the state level, these issues have not been partisan. Governor Milliken was one of the most important champions as it relates to the protection of our Great Lakes and our waterways, as an example. Unfortunately, these issues have become very caught up in the politics of today, both at the federal and at the state level. And as a result, we see a lot of inaction on the part of the legislators individually, and then a lot of partisanship and the individual legislators feeling pressured to actually vote with their party on issues that, frankly, they may have a strong opinion about, but they can't actually extract themselves from the partisanship. So I think it's a combination of factors. The environmental community came together thinking that this would be a very positive way to approach the legislature, and came together to actually come up with three key issues, only three that they thought was, were very important for them to address in this last session, this current session, frankly. One was increasing Michigan's renewable energy and energy efficiency standards since they sunset in 2015. The other was putting stronger safeguards in place to protect our waterways given the proliferation of hydraulic fracking. And the third one has to do with protecting public land. None of the three have been addressed thus far by the legislature.
Let's start with the one that most people are talking about, at least in my circles, and that's fracking-related legislation.
Yes, indeed. We have, as a state, known about fracking, although it's not been a household word until probably the last 5 years. But we've known about it because it's been happening in Michigan. The drilling for natural gas has been happening for over 50 years. And that drilling has been what we know as vertical drilling or vertical fracking. What we're dealing with today is horizontal fracking, which is much deeper, extends over a much wider expanse of our geologic formations, and actually uses not just thousands of gallons of water per well, but literally millions of gallons of water per well. And it also includes, by default, the necessity for more chemicals in the process, more water, deeper drilling, more chemicals. And so right now, the DEQ has put forth new rules, new proposed rules, to address the horizontal fracking that is being proposed in Michigan and the drilling wells that have been permitted. And the rules that they've put forth, frankly, fall woefully short. The DEQ has had two public hearings, which just took place last week, asking for public input on these rules. And from what I have seen and heard at those two public hearings, the majority of the people represented there want much stronger rules in place to protect not only the quality of our water, but the quantity of our water. This is a state defined by the water that surrounds us. It's critically important that we protect it.
We've had Dan Wyant on this program talking about this issue, Lisa, and he did say on the program that the public feedback would be very important. He also mentioned that there's a consortium or a group of researchers at the University of Michigan that's looking at this issue and assured our listeners that Michigan would not move aggressively forward in horizontal fracking until both of these things were completed, the public hearings and the input there and the University of Michigan study. Is there a good chance in your mind that that the legislation could change as a result of that?
You know, that would be my greatest hope. I mean, frankly, from the public hearings of last week, out of 100 people there had anything positive to say about the new proposed rules. People are very worried about how close some of these wells are being permitted to some of our state's most precious natural resources. There were wells proposed and continue to be proposed near what's called the Holy Waters, which is near the headwaters of the Manistee and the Osable Rivers. These wells are being permitted. They are getting ready for actual drilling. And so whether through this public input process, whether through the process that's underway at the University of Michigan, it would be my great hope that they would adopt much stronger rules to ensure that our waterways are protected, and that, frankly, public health is taken into consideration. The amount of chemicals used in this process is definitely something that people have the right to know. And at this point, given the proposed rules and how they're written, people do not have the right to know what chemicals are being used until 30 days after the well is actually being drilled.
Yeah, and I have a major problem with that one as well, because why not let people know what's in the fracking fluid ahead of time? Makes no sense whatsoever. It's sort of like if the fox is already in the hen house 30 days afterwards, then what are you going to do?
Exactly. And some of these chemicals are well-known carcinogens. So people, you know, as this becomes a much more well-known process and we find the wells not only being proposed but permitted closer and closer to people's homes and in incredibly important natural areas, it's very, very important to have that right to know built into this process.
Let's move on to the clean air standards, the clean energy standards in 2015 that will expire 10% 2015. We all know the Granholm administration was instrumental in putting those standards in place. It wasn't easy, but they got it done. Michigan Public Service Commission just did a number of data gathering sessions around Michigan. It appears that Michigan has the capacity to increase its renewable energy standards. But again, there's pushback going from 10% to 30% by 2030. I'm sorry.
Well, there is and there isn't. The polling that was done following Proposal 3, which obviously failed significantly in 2012, indicated that it was not a vote against the increase in our renewable energy standards at all. The public supports this in a significant number. The polling indicated that across the board, Republican, Democrat, and Independent, over 70% of Michiganders support moving forward with increased renewable energy standards. The process that the current governor made happen last spring with all of the public hearings and then the reports that came out in the fall of last year didn't indicate and write that the Public Service Commission was part of that process, that we are completely able to get to 30% by 2035. The governor addressed that in a public statement that he made in December of last year. There seems to be increased focus on the part of his energy office and the Michigan Public Service Commission. I think the problem right now lands with the legislature and with leadership on this issue. As we have seen with our current energy standard, our renewable energy standard, that the PSC estimates that Michigan has generated more than $2.2 billion of investment into our state's economy. So this is not only an issue that pertains to clean air and clean water, but it frankly pertains to our economy and the costs associated with producing energy.
And I think that economic impact is something that has certainly resonated with the Snyder administration. But I think you're absolutely right. So what it's going to take is the legislature, again, to step up, to stop the stonewalling, and to put the new standards in place. Because it sounds to me, I think you're absolutely right, there's a lot of support. I mean, even utility companies were surprised at how much the cost of, say, wind energy came down once some of these wind farms were developed.
That's absolutely right. And we see an increase. I mean, that both utility companies, Consumers Energy and DTE Energy have been doing a lot to actually meet the current standard, the 10% by 2015, which again sunsets next year. We're well on track to meet that. We now see wind farms in a number of locations across this state. And frankly, what we've also done, which I think is critically important for Michiganders to understand, is by moving to clean renewable sources, we're cutting the amount of toxic pollutants like mercury that spew from the smokestacks and into the air and come straight back down into our waterways. So when we think about the fishing community in this state and how beloved that fishing really is to our populace, and the fact that we have fish consumption advisories on every single inland lake and stream in Michigan, addressing our clean energy issues and moving to more clean renewable energy makes sense for a host of reasons, including, frankly, our fishing industry.
Give us a quick thumbnail on the cap on the amount of public land that the state can own.
Well, that's been a really interesting issue. I mean, the state right now, the legislature has put a cap, sort of an arbitrary cap on how much land the state can own. They promised that they would actually review this and then come back and actually remove that cap. And at this point, they haven't. So as we address the three things that the environmental and conservation community cited as most important for this legislature to address, again, which included the clean energy issues, the issues pertaining to hydrofracking and protection of our waterways and public land, this arbitrary cap still exists. The legislature has not moved to dismantle it or take it apart or remove it. And so here we sit with inaction on the part of the legislature and a state that's incredibly proud of its public lands, and we have this arbitrary cap that just is sitting there.
So the bottom line here, Lisa, and the take-home message for people who are concerned about our environment and our economy and the state's overall well-being, stay on your legislators to take some action to get things moving out of committee and onto the floor. Let's get some of these things done.
That's absolutely right. Whom we elect really matters, and public input and involvement and communication with those elected officials, I cannot overstate how important that is.
And I've been talking with Lisa Wozniak. She's the executive director of the Michigan League of Conservation Voters, and she is also a writer of a regular blog on mlive.com/environment. Lisa, great talking to you, and we'll be chatting again, I'm sure.
Thank you, Kirk. It's a pleasure.
That was Dr. Kirk Heinze with Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. There's more online at mlive.com/environment.
Hi, it's Scott Westerman for the MSU Alumni Association. How many times have you been wearing your Spartan apparel in an airport and a voice in the crowd shouts, "Go green"? Well, that's happened to me in Beijing, Osaka, Kuala Lumpur, and Mumbai, and even in unlikely places like Ann Arbor and Columbus. There's a special bond we Spartans share, and that's at the foundation of everything we do at the MSU Alumni Association. As the world's largest organization of Spartans helping Spartans, MSUAA truly is your personal network for life. From the moment you join, you've added thousands of fellow Spartans to your personal network, people who will pick up the phone and lend a hand just because you share Michigan State in common. That's the ethic that makes Spartans leaders, lifesavers, and world changers. And that's exactly what you'll find when you become an active member of the MSU Alumni Association. If you share this Spartan spirit, join us at alumni.msu.edu.
The Michigan State University Department of Radiology is a leader in MRI, imaging research, and patient care. From world-class research to state-of-the-art patient care, we're providing outstanding diagnostic imaging technology. We're also a leader in sports medicine, delivering quality care to athletes and sports participants of all ages. Visit us online at rad.msu.edu and see how we are boldly designing the future. This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Russ White.
Thanks, Hannah. I recently caught up with noted attorney Jeffrey Feiger.
In 2001, you donated $4 million to the MSU College of Law, which at one time was the Detroit College of Law, your alma mater, to establish the Jeffrey Feiger Trial Practice Institute at the MSU College of Law. What motivated you to do that?
I want to say altruism, but that's not entirely true. The Detroit College of Law had moved up to Michigan State, a beautiful new facility, and a couple heads better than mine had gotten together and decided that one of the things that could put Michigan State University Law School, if you will, on the map would be a trial institute in which young law students are trained in trial practice. It really has never been done in an accredited law school across the country, as incredible as that sounds. And they came to me and they said, look, you know, this is something we've been thinking about. What do you think about it? And if you like our idea, would you be interested in endowing it? And they presented me with a curriculum. They thought that my style or the method in which I've practiced and I talk about in terms of things that are necessary to be trial attorneys was a good thing to incorporate into the curriculum, like a little psychology, a little theater, which is just public speaking, really, in a varied way. And they presented it to me and said, would you be interested? And I thought about it, and I had a few million lying around, so I said, yeah.
While you're not intimately involved in the day-to-day operations, are you pleased with how it's going?
Yeah, they have me there yearly or semi-yearly for a speech, and I'm always impressed with what they've done. They tell me that it is the single biggest draw for the law school. I mean, realistically, it's a Big Ten law school now. They're putting themselves on the map. Their pass rates in terms of the bar exam are exceedingly high. Their draw from all over the country is very good. In other words, it's much less of a local or regional school and much more of a national school now. And again, they tell me the number one draw, if you will, for their law school and the number one interest that's expressed is the Trial Practice Institute, which is the first and only that I know of school of its kind, accredited law school in which second and third year law students come out of law school with a certification in trial practice, which, if that's what you're interested in, is invaluable.
What is the basic mission of your law firm?
To provide the best quality legal representation in a trial law firm. We're a personal injury firm. We only represent individuals against the corporations and against the insurance companies. I don't represent corporations. I don't represent insurance companies. And we represent people who desire attorneys who will go to trial and who won't sell them out and who aren't looking for a quick settlement and who will take the case all the way to trial if that's what needs to be done. I think we have probably, if not the physical largest, we may have the physical largest in Michigan. We certainly have the biggest in terms of the number of cases that we handle, the number of big cases.
Jeffrey Figer, one of the cornerstones of the Figer Trial Practice Institute at the MSU College of Law is the technologically advanced courtroom. Can you talk a bit about how technology has impacted the practice of law over the years?
The way it has most significantly affected the practice is access to legal research. When I started law school, the only method by which you could do legal research is to go to the books and look for the cases and shepherdize them, which is the method by which we saw if every case had ever been cited before. Today, because of the computerization of huge resources, legal research is much more effective. That would be the single biggest change. Technology in the courtroom, the idea that we can use Elmos, that we can use videos, we can use DVDs, you can store things on a computer, you know, that's all flash, smoke, and mirror. Ultimately, when I talk about the courtroom, I talk about convincing jurors, and that's what I have to do. And no amount of flash or bells, whistles, and lights is going to change that.
Jeffrey, you ran for governor of Michigan back in 1998. I mean, what motivated you to do so, and is there maybe another run for office in your future?
Probably utter stupidity. When you run for political office, you expose yourself to the cruelest of all criticisms. And it's not that I don't have a thick skin, but the type of people that can run for political office today are people who literally have been living in a closet their entire life, people who have no life, because they start looking at every aspect of your life. And look what they did to President Clinton. I mean, whether or not he had an affair, I could care less about that. And that's not an issue for me. And in essence, I think we're reaping what we sow. Look who we have now in political office. We don't have the best and the brightest. We don't have people who are successful and give something back. We have people who need the job, and it's the best job they ever have, and they never want to leave it.
Jeffrey, what's your advice to law students today who maybe want to be the next Jeffrey Figer?
Don't try to be me. Just be yourself. It's the hardest thing in the world that you can do. If you think you want to be a trial lawyer, if you think you want to be the best trial lawyer who ever inhabited a courtroom, then look at yourself in the mirror and maybe lay down on a couch and have a psychologist or psychiatrist examine your head until you really understand what makes you tick, because you can't imitate me. You can't be me. You can only be yourself, and you can be the best yourself of what you are, if that makes sense at all. Be the best you possibly can.
In closing, Jeffrey, could you just summarize your feelings for the Trial Practice Institute at MSU that has your name on it, and what would you like people to know about it?
Well, I'm very proud of it. I like the fact that it trains people to do what I do. I like the fact that it's the first accredited school of its kind in the country. I like the fact that it has my name on it. And I like the fact that it's at the school which accepted me and matriculated me. So all in all, I'm very, very proud of it, and I'm happy for its success. And I hope they continue with my name after they have used up my money.
Jeffrey, thanks so much for spending time with us today.
Thanks. Appreciate it, everybody at MSU.
Jeffrey Feiger, noted trial practice attorney whose name is on the Feiger Trial Practice Institute at MSU's College of Law. And there's more on the web at law.msu.edu.
This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
The program is MSU Today. I'm Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association with some observations from the Spartan life. We love our comfort zones. Even an uncomfortable status quo is preferable to the unknown. But things change. We outgrow a job, or the job outgrows us. Our relationship ends. A health crisis appears. Or the sting of an unhappy current reality becomes so great that we are forced to step outside of our self-imposed boundaries. This is one of life's great ironies. We often fight to stay inside the box when the very thing we need to fuel our future lies on the outside. This week, make a list of the things that are keeping you inside your comfort zone. How many of them are self-imposed? Every single one. The next chapter of your life's adventure will be written with or without your direct involvement. Maybe it's time to imagine what that chapter might be if your uncomfortable comfort zone didn't exist. As I was researching this week's message, I discovered this anonymous poem, which I've customized just for you. I hope it gets you thinking about those self-imposed limitations and the opportunities that lie beyond them. I used to have a comfort zone where I knew I wouldn't fail. The same four walls and busy work were really more like jail. I longed so much to do the things I'd never done before, but stayed inside my comfort zone and paced the same old floor. I didn't want to build the traits successful people share. I watched my friends advance and thrive, pretending not to care. I claimed to be so busy with the things inside the zone, but deep inside, I longed for something special of my own. I couldn't let my life go by just watching others grow. I held my breath, I stepped outside, and let the changes flow. I took a step, and with new strength I'd never felt before, I kissed my comfort zone goodbye and closed and locked the door. If you're in a comfort zone, afraid to venture out, remember that our heroes were at one time filled with doubt. A step or two and words of praise can make your dreams come true. Reach for your future with a smile. Happiness is there for you. I'm Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association. Learn more about Spartans Helping Spartans at alumni.msu.edu.
This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
Thank you for listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. To hear this show again, please click on the local tab at WKAR.org and scroll to MSU Today every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock on AM 870 WKAR.